worry, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 72 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will be joined by the food duo for a very special What We've Been Eating Expo West edition, and then dive into a full-length review of What the Health, the latest film from the makers of Cowspiracy.
You know, I love a good film review, Paul.
Yes, although it was teased, what was it, last episode, that this might be our last health documentary review, which I think I would be okay with.
Yes, I guess we will talk about that more in the review if we feel like this should be the last, if this is the definitive health documentary, no need to look at any others, or if they're just too repetitive at this point. But that remains to be seen.
So before we bring on the food duo, Andy, I know you've been eating at some nice places, interesting places. What have you been having?
Yeah, Paul, I have continued my time in Los Angeles, and there's a lot of great food going on here. Most of it, everyone can go check out on our Instagram, which is just The Bearded Vegans. But some things that were noteworthy is I went to Disneyland, and it's been a minute. Paul, I've been doing a lot of touristy things out here.
Sounds like it.
I was an audience member on The Price is Right, which was absolutely a lot of fun. Amazing. But really happy to see that right around the corner, like adjacent to the CBS Studios lot, is a veggie grill. Ooh. And many a contestant, audience member and contestants of Price is Right went there to eat afterwards. So there may be several secret vegans on the Price is Right airing April 6th, if you want to see my face sitting in the crowd clapping like, I don't know, something that claps.
Nice.
But anyway, at Disneyland, you know, I'm a little disappointed that there's not, like, way more vegan stuff, fun vegan stuff happening at Disneyland. But the thing to get at Disneyland is the vegan gumbo served in a bread bowl.
Ooh.
Yes. It can be found at Royal Street Veranda, which is just kind of like a walk-up window in Frontierland. And they give you a pretty hearty serving of this really delicious vegan gumbo. Not that I have a ton of gumbo experience to compare it to, but I thought it was very tasty. And then it comes in like a sourdough bread bowl. Or as our friend Droopy Dog might say, Paul, a bread bowl.
Oh, he's breaking it out.
Yes. So that was fun. There's like a couple other things. There's like veggie burgers and stuff there. And I guess you can get some like Mickey Mouse shaped waffles, but nothing super off the charts other than this vegan gumbo. So props to Disneyland for offering that now. I hope y'all continue. You hear that, Disneyland?
Yeah. Yeah.
Disneyland, the entity that's listening. I hope you continue to expand your vegan options.
Nice.
So, Paul, I did take a brief trip back to the Northeast for some family functions and spending time with some loved ones. And during that time, I missed Expo West, which is the big natural foods product expo that happens every year, twice a year, actually. There's an East and a West. West is the one where, like, typically a lot more really fun, wacky, new vegan food products are debuted. It's pretty much a who's who of all the vegan companies. There's plenty of non-vegan stuff there. There's, like, supplements and food labeling people, but this is where, like, Daya will unveil a new thing. This is where Field Roast will unveil a new thing, Gardein, etc. So normally I'm there and I'm getting a big scoop on everything and posting a ton of pictures on Instagram. I was not there this year. And I was like, oh, we could just talk about the things that, like, Veg News posted and perhaps speculate on if we think they're good or not. But instead, I decided that it's time we bring out some special guests. Carlo and Carmela, otherwise known as the Food Duo, also the proprietors of V-Marks The Shop. And they were there. They were trying everything. Their Instagram is full of pictures. So we are going to bring them on right now, and they're going to talk about their top five favorite products found at Expo West. So let's get to it. Carmela and Carlo, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I've been drooling over your Instagram the Food Duo, as you've been posting all the fancy, fun, exciting new finds at Expo. I was sad that I couldn't be there, so we wanted to get you on and get your take on everything. I greatly trust your food opinions. So let's get into it. I just want to hear a top five of your favorite finds at Expo West this year. So what do you think would be number five?
It's difficult to rank them. We could the top five we can do. It's just really hard to rank them, except for number one, I think. But I don't know. What would you say about five?
Number five, I think I would say Watusi Foods. They're chickpea crumbs. So they are chickpea paste breadcrumbs in a panko style. This company, they make a product called Chickpeatos, which are chickpea snacks, and this chickpea crumb breadcrumb product is what they debuted at Expo West. They were part of the hot products exhibition, and I mean, when you look at it, it looks like breadcrumbs. It's got the texture. It doesn't just taste like chickpeas. I'm very excited for that. I particularly want to use it in the air fryer.
Yes, definitely an air fry kind of thing. You could probably use it in mac and cheese, too, as a topping. You know, some people like to put breadcrumbs on their mac and cheese or casseroles. Definitely would work with that, too.
That sounds good. They must be some mighty good breadcrumbs or chickpea crumbs to make it into a top five. Yeah. So definitely excited to try those.
Yeah, it was definitely a wow for us. Yeah. Because when we walked by, like we already have known the brand because Carlo eats chickpea snacks.
I love them.
Get crazy.
Since I was a kid, I've loved these kind of snacks. And now they're becoming more mainstream. We used to be able to get them in like little Italian markets and I used to love them as a child. My grandparents would buy bags of this stuff, and I'd go through them.
Yeah, so the crumbs were definitely exciting to see. So I'm really eager to really get my hands dirty with them and with the air fryer.
It'll be ensconced in crumbs.
Because they're you know, it's great for people that are gluten free, and the products are organic. So that's the added bonus.
Yeah, that's true. You know, there's been many a time when I've been looking for breadcrumbs in the store, and so many of them have eggs, so hopefully these will be widely available.
It's true.
All right, let's get a number four. Even if it's not exactly ordered correctly, let's just call this one number four. What's the next thing you think people need to know about?
Oh, boy. It was some real – this year had some good stuff at Expo West.
Natamu's birthday cake ice cream.
Yeah, I like that.
So it's one of the two new flavors that they have. The other one is the Rockiest Road. So it's the Rocky Road. Natamu is coconut-based vegan ice cream, or as the FDA would tell you to say, non-dairy frozen dessert. but the birthday, I loved cake batter ice cream before I went vegan. So to have something like this come out from Natamu is very exciting, with the sprinkles and the cake batter flavor. So I was really, really happy about that. Yeah, if I compare it to the Rockiest Road, I mean, they're pretty on par, but the birthday cake gets the edge for me.
There's going to be a day when the ice cream companies are going to beg to be called non-dairy frozen desserts. That day is coming when they're going to want to muscle in on our name. Watch.
All right. We'll check back in 5 years and see how that prediction has
That's about right.
Yeah. All right. What's your number three?
I would say they're either three or two.
No.
They're two?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we go back and forth on this list. number three, I'm going to say the Nature's Charm salted caramel sauce.
Yeah.
So yes. I think Nature's Charm, like their parent company, is something like Family International USA. I'm not entirely sure. But last year, they came out on the market with a coconut condensed milk. So for people that want to use sweetened condensed milk, they now have the non-dairy version. This year, Nature's Charm expanded their line, so they now have a coconut whipped cream in a can. and they now offer these different sauces, which I think are all coconut based, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. There's salted caramel, which is amazing. A chocolate fudge, which is really good, and a butterscotch. I'm not the biggest butterscotch fan, but I did happen to like this one. Yeah. But the salted caramel was amazing. It was so good. And you really had like a nice balance of the salt and the caramel together. That it was something that I would just pour over just about anything.
It smelled like caramel, too. And it had like, you remember those caramel chunks when you were a kid, the little squares that were wrapped in plastic? It was reminiscent of that. They really, really, they have it dead on. It's absolutely delicious, and it's not too sweet. It's just right. I really like that brand a lot.
I'm a sucker for anything salted caramel, so that is right up my alley.
So I guess we're going to go right into number two. Well,
number two. Upton's.
Yes.
And first, I'll preface this. They have a whole bunch of new products. They have an entire new line, and it's all amazing, all of it. However, this one that really just stood out for me was the bacon mac and cheese. And not only does it just taste great, looks great, smells great, you can heat it up in 1 minute. It's already cooked. So it has the packet, and the pasta's cooked. So all you have to do is heat it up and then put the cheese on the packet and mix it. And it's got bits of bacon in it that Upton's make.
It's absolutely delicious. It's inspired by the mac that they make right. In Upton's Break Room in Chicago.
Right, in Upton's Break Room, for anyone who doesn't know, it's this little cafe that they have that's kind of attached to their seitan factory, and it's really popular and someplace that we definitely have to visit. It's definitely on our short list. And they've gotten a lot of requests for it over the years, and I guess they decided to just do it, and it was really, really, really good. I loved it.
Yeah,
it
the
was
bacon
delicious.
Cheesy mac. There's also a plain cheesy mac, which is really good too.
Really good too.
Just a quick plug, if you go to Upton's Facebook page, there is a video from last week with Carlo and Nicole from Upton's walking through all the new products.
Yes.
I saw that. It's exciting that they're putting out so many new things. And I just saw Nicole post like a week before our expo, hey, Friday, we're unveiling, I think, 8 new products. And I was just, mind was a little bit blown there. I really love everything they do.
Yeah.
Their bacon mac from the Break Room is probably my favorite thing they do. And they cook it. They like put it on the griddle for a little bit so it gets a little crispy. And highly recommend everyone goes out to the Break Room if they're in Chicago, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this is one of those items that if you bring it to your break room at work or anywhere where there's a bunch of non-vegans, they're going to taste it and they're going to be like, wow.
So hide your lunch.
And if you're introducing non-vegans to vegan food for the first time, I would hold off on the quinoa chips and bring something more familiar like this. And then you get them with the quinoa chips later.
I cannot wait until those hit the shelves. Did they tell you when they're going to be in stores?
Yeah, I think it's like May-June.
May-June, yes. Yeah. So it's not too far down the road. I'm very, very excited. You're going to love this. It's so good.
That is exciting. Yeah, I think that right now there's not a boxed mac and cheese that I am head over heels in love with yet. So I have high hopes for this one.
Yeah, this might be the one.
All right. Well, let's without further ado, get to number one, which you said is clearly number one. So what is it?
Yeah, this was the talk of Expo West. Every year, there's probably one or two products that like almost every vegan you talk to like raves about. And this year, I didn't hear a single bad thing about this one.
So no, not a single
one.
Bad
Everybody
thing.
Likes this. Even people who don't like this product, in particular this food, they liked it. So you want to have the honor of
doing
number one?
So number one is the Field Roast Mini Corn Dogs. I'll be perfectly honest. I never had a corn dog before until I went vegan. So I had no idea, like, before what it was all about. Like, I've always seen pictures of it. So now that I've been vegan and I've had a couple of corn dogs, including the corn dogs in Philly at Fox and Friends, which is new, vegan corn dogs in Philadelphia, these mini ones from Field Roast are ridiculously good. So they use the Field Roast Frankfurter, mm-hmm. which struck me because I thought it was, using one of their other new products, the little smokies, which are like the little sausages.
Little cocktail.
Yeah, I thought it was that. And they said, no, it's actually the Frankfurter that they use for the corn dogs. And whatever they use for the batter, I don't know, it's good. It's really good.
It is. Not too often, but in the past when I was on before, I did have a corn dog or two. And I used to like them, and they really taste like those. The breading is dead on, and they're just so tasty. They just have this, like, I don't know how to explain it.
I mean, it's definitely made for parties. It's party food.
Yes, absolutely.
Or, you know, snacking or whatever.
Or binge-watching your favorite Netflix show. This is a binge-watch snack.
But this is, like, it's total comfort, but it's total happiness at the same time. Like I know people put, like, mustard with their corn dog or whatever. You don't need anything for it. That's how good it is. There's a lot of flavor between the Frankfurter and the batter that they use.
Wow, so that'll probably be great in the air fryer.
Yes.
Oh, totally.
Yes. Yeah. And on top of that, there's two other products that I kind of would say fall into the party cocktail line with Field Roast. That's their buffalo wings that they call Fruffalo. And those are really good.
I like
and
those,
then
yeah.
they make, now they also have a southern fried cutlet that you can cut up or use for sandwiches, that sort of thing. Those two are really good, but the corn dogs are on a whole other level. Field Roast also has a seasonal line of sausages that include the little smokies that are coming out as well.
There's
a Hawaiian one, and was the other one a bratwurst?
I don't remember. I just remember the Hawaiian one struck me as a really clever one. That looks good. That's something I definitely will want to try. I like all their products anyway. I'm pretty much... I don't think there's a product of theirs I don't like.
It's all good, but the corn dogs.
Yeah.
Everybody was going crazy for those.
For seconds a few times, and I admit it.
Seconds a few times. Notice that.
See, that means four times.
I cannot wait to get them. Yeah, it seemed like Field Roast, especially, was really dominating a lot of the feeds and Instagrams and whatnot that I was looking at over the course of the weekend. So. Can't wait to get my hands on those. And so this is half of your top 10 list, and you have a full top 10 list. Where can people find that?
You can find that on thefoodduo.com. So thefoodduo, thefoodduo.com. We also are sharing some of our eats while we were on the West Coast. So you'll find posts about Ekalokua, the Cuban vegan spot in LA, Donut Friend. I think we have Magpies coming up. So we have all that going on. We also are working on a second list of finds from Expo West, because there were a lot of good things that just didn't make the top 10, but we really feel it's important to share what some of these companies are doing.
Yeah. It seemed like a lot of exciting stuff happening. So that's all the good. Let me ask you this. Was there anything that you saw and you were so excited to try and it was maybe just a little disappointing for you?
I wouldn't say excited to try. There are a few things I tried I just flat out did not like. One was corn. Corn has a vegan, like, chopped chicken thing, and I hated it. It was really bad. Like, I thought last year I tried one of their products and it seemed okay, decent. So I thought maybe this year they would up their game, but no, it was not good.
Yeah, I didn't experience.
I did not like it whatsoever.
I didn't go with you for
probably
that.
My least favorite thing I had of the entire. There's another brand that I kind of don't want to say anything because they're kind of a little brand, and I don't know. I think they're new, so I'll give them a year to iron it out. But Corn's kind of a bigger company, so they can take it.
Yeah.
if people remember last year, there was that big announcement from the company that they were going to go all vegan. And on the East Coast, we didn't.
No.
We only saw one product hit the freezers.
I didn't like it.
And last year at Expo, when we tried like their vegan cutlet, it wasn't bad. They were doing like a chicken and waffles kind of thing. So it was good. It wasn't something I'm going to go crazy over.
Yeah.
So when Carlo told me, like, essentially, don't even bother this year.
I
was like, okay, something must have changed.
I guess the other thing that's a disappointment is that both Gardein and Earth Balance didn't have anything new this year. So it's not that their products weren't good. It doesn't have anything new that we could have tried, which I'm kind of surprised by, especially Gardein, because Gardein almost always puts out something new.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of things that, for me, that I saw that were disappointing, I honestly, I didn't hit too many that were like, what, you know, what are you people doing? I was more disappointed in how some exhibitors who are not non-vegan exhibitors treated vegans when we asked, you know, if they had a vegan option or a vegan product for us to try, and some of the snarky comments, rather uncalled for, and I don't recall experiencing that before.
No, and I think part of that is because, if I'm not mistaken, there was like 500 more vendors than last year, which is a lot. There's already thousands. So 500 more, just the law of averages says that if you got 500 more people in any room, there's going to be more jerks. And there were a couple that were just like, look, if you don't make vegan products and you don't plan to, you don't have to be snarky about it. You can just simply say, I'm sorry, it's something we don't make. You know, you can even be you can lie a little bit and say, hey, you know what? It's something we'll take under consideration one day. You know, just be nice. I don't know. You don't have to be rude.
Yeah, that's a bummer to hear. All right, well, the one last thing I want to ask you about, because you did not mention it, is that Daya reformulated their cheese. And did you get a chance to try it? Is it significantly different? Is it better? What do you think?
Okay, so they reformulated, and they actually launched an American cheese slice at the same time.
Yeah.
The shreds are so much better, and they repackaged, so it doesn't have the same look as you've seen before. It actually looks a little more sophisticated.
Nice.
For the shreds packaging.
Yeah, yeah.
So very excited about that. I think they also reformulated the yogurt, the Greek-style yogurt that they were doing. Those are very good. The cheese slices, I was like, okay, it's all right. But the shreds were definitely the crowd pleaser. The best thing, though, at Daya was the pumpkin spice cheesecake that's coming out, I think, late summer, early fall.
That was really good. That could have cracked our top five. That was like a borderline top five.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good. It's really, really good.
Oh, and the pizza. They relaunched their pepperoni pizza. This time, Daya is making the pepperoni themselves.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, very nice.
Good.
Well, I'm glad Daya, I think, they kind of busted on the scene with the first, like, very widely available, at the time, really great cheese shred. And they seems like they kind of were sitting on their laurels a little bit, and now they're realizing they have to step it up with so many other great cheeses coming out. So
yeah,
I am glad to hear that it is so much better.
Yeah, and that's why when some people, you know, they're like, oh, there's too many brands. No, no way. The more brands, the better, because it's going to force these companies to, like, up their game and not, like you said, rest on their laurels when they're going to come up with, you know, when there's more competition, it's great, because they're all going to have to up their game, and it's just going to,
The non-vegan companies are seeing that. I mean, we're seeing the investments being made.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Pinnacle acquired Gardein and Boulder Brands, which owns Earth Balance and Erewhon cereal. Yeah. So that right there was the start. Tyson investing in Beyond Meat. I mean, we're seeing these things happen, and there's going to be more investments, happening over time, because they see that there's a clear demand for it. And it's not just from the vegans.
Right.
The non-vegans want vegan products, too, because they know they taste good.
Yeah. That is, it's the we're seeing a huge changing of the tide right now.
Yeah.
It's exciting to see where it's going.
It is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Carlo and Carmela, thank you very much for joining us. Where can people follow along with your work? You already mentioned the website. What social media should people be checking out?
So you can follow us as The Food Duo, pretty much at The Food Duo, across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, which we don't use as much as we like, but all across all those channels. And you also can follow our store, VMark's the Shop, Right now we're online only, but we're working to set up our brick and mortar in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You can follow us there, themarkstheshop.com. Check out our different events that we have going on down in the city. And social media, it's at themarkstheshop.
Right on. Well, thank you once again for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So that was good to have, you know, some other people than us talking. I know we haven't interviewed anyone in a while. Hopefully we can get some more interviews in the future. But I think now it's time for our review of What the Health.
The diabetes, the arthritis, the heart disease, the dementia, the obesity, the cancers are affecting about 70% of deaths.
We have an epidemic cascade of debilitating disease that's overcoming the country.
18% of children are morbidly obese right now. We're on par to have 1 in 3 people be diabetic in the next 25 years. That's crazy statistics.
We have this very dangerous situation.
Large amounts of these substances have unquestionably been associated with clogged arteries, high blood pressure, diabetes, autoimmune diseases. Absolutely, the science is solid.
We're talking life and death.
Health organizations have become co-opted. They are taking money from the very industries who are causing the problems.
There's a very strong pharmaceutical industry and lobby that has a huge stake in preserving the status quo.
We've got a $35 billion statin drug industry. Do they ever want to see that go away?
All right, Paul. So normally before we do a film review, we kind of give our usual disclaimer of we're just going to spoil the heck out of this whole thing. I think that since What the Health is a film that has a bit more of a narrative arc. There's kind of things that get discovered during the film. I don't think anything super huge. If someone found out, they wouldn't enjoy the film anymore. It's not like the ending of Sixth Sense or something. But we are going to do a short general thoughts on the film, and then we're going to have a little marker where we say, from here on out, we're going to spoil the hell out of everything that's happening in this film. So if you have not seen the film, you can find it at whatthehealthfilm.com. Go check it out there if you feel the need to. But if you're looking for our opinions on if you should see it or not, we're going to talk about that right now before getting into spoilers. So the plot synopsis from IMDb is: an intrepid filmmaker on a journey of discovery as he uncovers possibly the largest health secret of our time and the collusion between industry, government, pharmaceutical, and health organizations keeping this information from us. So, Paul, if I remember correctly, our, or at least my biggest complaint about Cowspiracy, and this is the film from Kip and Keegan, who made Cowspiracy, was that they had this little throw-in health section with Dr. Michael Clapper, and I felt like it was like super underdeveloped and they didn't use like a great talking point. And this film feels as if maybe they listened to that episode and took that comment to heart, because this is an entire film based off of the health aspects of veganism / a plant-based diet. So this is a film that, much like Cowspiracy, follows Kip Anderson on his journey of kind of delving into the world of health and organizations and all that stuff. So let me ask you, Paul, do you feel like this is a worthy follow-up to Cowspiracy? Does it do a way better job of filling in the health like aspect of veganism?
Before I answer your question, I just want to say you should have said before we should tune into Price is Right to see you clapping like Dr. Clapper. That would have been a good thing to insert. But yes, I do. I think if I hadn't known that this was by the same people who did Cowspiracy, I think I would have watched this and been like, huh, this is kind of like Cowspiracy. Like, it had a very, very similar feel to it. And I mean, it is, as we've critiqued in the past, like a lot of the, or at least in my opinion, a lot of these documentaries can be kind of dry and they don't really have any plot or anything like that. So this is kind of nice, because I think as much as a movie like this could have a plot, like it did have a plot. And I should say, as much as a movie like this has a plot that's not just like following a person or a group of people around that are like, watch our journey, watch our transformation over these 6 weeks or something like that. Because not that those are necessarily bad, or not that I'm glad that people aren't, you know, getting healthy, but that's kind of what I think these types of documentaries rely on a lot, which makes perfect sense. Like, when you think about like, oh, I'm making a movie about this specific diet that I'm trying to say is going to get people healthy, what better way to do that than showing people getting healthy on this diet? But I think that this, what the health, you know, it actually has something slightly different to it. And it has that kind of element of some slight element of like drama and maybe like plot twisty type things, maybe. So I think it was, you know, at least at the very least, it was more exciting than a lot of these other vegan health documentaries.
Yeah, I have to agree with that as well. I think that, this is something that we've harped on so often in these documentaries, is just how dry it is, like you said. And also I'm thinking about Plant Pure Nation. That was a film that was really trying to wring drama out of some things that were inherently undramatic. But I still like appreciated that they're trying to make things seem exciting, even though they weren't really, by throwing in those dramatic music cues. But this is something that I feel like is genuinely intriguing. And as someone who is, you know, relatively well-versed in the things they're talking about, I still found myself learning things and found myself being surprised at certain aspects and facts that were unveiled. So
I think, I don't know, maybe I don't want to talk about this till the spoiler section, but I was surprised at a lot of the stuff that they were saying, to the point that I was kind of like, is this true? Like, is this true information? So, but I guess we can talk about that in the spoiler section.
Yeah, let's put a pin in that one for sure. But yeah, no, I actually had the same thing. I was like, I'm so used to hearing these talking points, and they're throwing in a couple new ones that I feel like should be used more widely. Not that I don't doubt that they wouldn't do their research, you know, they put themselves out on the line like this, so they really want to make sure whatever they're saying is very kind of buttoned up, you know, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, I think that this is something that even someone who is fully vegan would get something out of if they watched the film. So I think that before we move into spoilers, I would just say that with a few reservations around some fat-shamey kind of stuff, I think that, and we'll talk about that a lot more in the spoiler section, but I feel like with all of that kind of in mind, that you're going into a health documentary, they're going to talk about weight, they're going to talk about labeling foods healthy or unhealthy, which is not necessarily a great thing, you know, when you're dealing with like eating disorders. But like, if you kind of have those things in your head and you're aware that that's what you're going into, I would say that I could pretty wholeheartedly recommend that people go out and see this film. Yeah. Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, I would recommend people see this film too. I think, I don't know, you know what? I haven't seen Forks Over Knives in a few years at this point. Like, I kind of want to go back and watch that to be like, this movie. I mean, this movie just, I thought it looks very, very good. Like, I thought it looked great. So I wonder if going back and watching something like Forks Over Knives, if even at this point, What the Health just looks better. And even if it's giving off very similar information, just the feel of it and how it looks would attract people more now than showing them Forks Over Knives and people being like, oh, this is like an older movie. Like, I can't trust this information because it might be outdated or something like that. But yeah, I thought it was a well done movie, and I would definitely recommend it to people.
Right on. So I think with that, we will say spoilers are happening now. If you've seen the film, I think this will be a really fun discussion. If you haven't seen the film, go check it out. But, you know, if you think it's not going to be a while till you see it, I don't think you're going to feel like your experience has been ruined by listening to the following discussion. But if that is something that you are worried about, go check out the film right now at whatthehealthfilm.com. Come back and join us for the rest of the discussion. So yeah, so I guess let's just kind of like go through the film and talk about how we felt about various sections. Very much in the vein of Cowspiracy, the film opens up with this interview clip, which is Robert Ratner of the American Diabetes Association. And it's like kind of this like gotcha clip, like in the beginning of Cowspiracy, and ask about the correlation between diabetes and diet. And he's like, I'm not going to talk about that. And then it like starts right into the film, talks about Kip's journey. He says he's a recovering hypochondriac. And because of, you know, always being worried about health and his history, his family's history of health, he's always following, you know, what the various health organizations, the Heart Association, Diabetes Association, et cetera, Cancer Society, what they recommend for a healthy lifestyle, like no smoking, no soda, get exercise. Part of me was like, was he really paying attention that much to what those organizations say? But, you know, it paints like a very nice picture of the type of person that he is and the concerns that he has. And, yeah, Paul, how did you feel about the setup of this whole thing?
Well, I did think it was kind of funny that, and I mean, obviously, I think this was a good choice for him to do, but he's definitely like making this film as if Cowspiracy, or he's talking as if Cowspiracy had not happened, you know, because it's like at the end of Cowspiracy, he's kind of like, oh, and I'm going to adopt like a plant-based vegan diet. And it's kind of like this movie is like as if none of that stuff happened. And it makes sense because not everyone's going to have seen Cowspiracy that's going to see this. And it's going to it's better for, you know, the plot of the movie if it's someone who is coming into it like, oh, I don't know anything about this stuff. And now I've uncovered all this stuff. But just kind of, you know, knowing that he's already vegan is just kind of it's kind of like I had to chuckle to myself to be like, oh, he knew all this stuff already, he wasn't uncovering this.
yeah it's funny with the environmental thing, because with, you know, the health section of Cowspiracy, there was like a section like that in What the Health. It was like the environmental little throwaway thing where he very quickly is like, oh, it's also the leading cause of rainforest deforestation and soil erosion and species extinction, and lists a couple of things. And then he goes right back into the film. And I wanted to be like him to be like, oh, and by the way, I actually made a feature length documentary on that that you could check out called Cowspiracy.
Yeah, I totally wanted him to say that too.
And, you know, that's something that when I watched Cowspiracy, I was like, I wonder how much of this is kind of fabricated as far as his personal journey. How much of this is actually fabricated to make a better film? And so I guess that feeling got kind of doubled down upon because it's like, we know he already knows all this information and he has to kind of flesh it out. And it's also, you know, it could just be kind of like essentially a dramatic recreation of something that did happen to him, where he did discover all this health information. But yeah, someone who has seen Cowspiracy might find that to be a bit disingenuous or something along those lines.
I thought that, but then I was kind of okay with it because I think it was necessary for the plot of the movie. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been a plot. So because of that, you know, people that I think are going to benefit the most from this movie are going to be people that probably don't know about that anyways, and are just going to be maybe oblivious to the fact that he was probably already vegan when he made this, or he already knew a lot of this information. So, you know, I think it's like, okay, I don't think it's harmful at all that he's maybe, you know, fabricating the truth a little bit.
About that.
I mean, obviously he shouldn't be like lying about the actual health stuff, but just about his personal journey.
Yeah, it's something that it was just kind of like a little, that makes me chuckle. It wasn't something that I was like, this ruins the movie, or someone who's seen Cowspiracy is going to watch this and be like, well, everything must be fake in here. So I give it a pass, but I think, yeah, it was just kind of like a little moment where we both went, that's amusing.
I also think,
Paul, my favorite moment when I went, was when he was talking about the diet recommendations from, I believe it was the Diabetes Association, and he's like, and they even have a recipe for bacon-wrapped shrimp. What the health?
Yeah.
I went, I get it, because the name of the film is What the Health. Like, that's just, like, what was going on when that happened. Anyway, what were you going to say, Paul?
I was going to say, I did think that the clip that they open on, which is when he's talking to the American Diabetes Association guy, that was definitely the most intense moment of the movie, I thought. And I wish there was like a few more moments like that. Like, it was very reminiscent of Cowspiracy, and I think there were like a few more moments in Cowspiracy that had that kind of tension than there were in What the Health. But you know, I mean, it was smart of them to play that at the beginning, because it's kind of like, oh, this is what I'm looking forward to. And then that scene totally was very tense.
So delightfully awkward.
Oh God. Like I don't understand that person's reaction. It was just like, oh, it was like very, incriminating, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there are so many different ways he could have answered that that would have been like, oh, I, like, yeah, I don't know. It was just, yeah, it was very awkward.
Yeah, he could have just been like, I'm unsure. I'll have to do some research and get back to you. Or, like, but yeah, he was just like, we don't talk about that. We're not going to talk about that. I'm not looking to argue with you. And Kip is sitting there, like, very calmly, like, well, I'm not arguing. I just think it's interesting. This. And he's like, well, I need a study. Well, I have the study right here. Well, I don't have time to read that study. And, like, kind of storms off and throws down the mic.
And if you haven't seen it, basically, Kip is asking, he's just like, oh, so I think, I forget what the first thing he says that kind of sets the guy off, but it's even just like, oh, I noticed, like, you have some meal guidelines on your website. And the guy's like, I'm not talking about food. And Kip is just kind of like, you're not going to talk about food, like, for in terms of how it can prevent diabetes? And the guy's like, no, I'm not talking about food. He's like, we don't recommend any, like, any meal plan. And it flashes on the screen a bunch of screenshots of the website that's like, meal plan for diabetes. And that was kind of funny too.
I loved that so much. They did that in Cowspiracy as well, where they would put something up on the screen that's contradicting what the person was saying. And they like brought it up, and then they have like a little arrow that kind of waves pointing towards diabetes meal plan. And I wish I had seen this in a theater for that aspect alone, because I'm sure that would have gotten a pretty big laugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you, Paul. I wish that they had more moments like this. That was kind of the real substance of Cowspiracy in many ways, was these interviews with these organizations and trying to holding them to task. If I had to guess without knowing, without basing this on any facts whatsoever, I would assume that because of Cowspiracy, when he requested interviews with people, they probably looked him up and were like, oh, he's going to make us look like fools. We're not going to do this. I would imagine that the existence of Cowspiracy made it harder in some ways for them to get content for this film. That it would just, and honestly, that makes me surprised that they even got the interview that they did with Robert Ratner.
Yeah, he's kind of got the Sacha Baron Cohen syndrome now, where he can't really go in public and do those characters because everyone knows who they are.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
And I feel like they tried to still like squeeze out what they could with. Because he was making a bunch of different scenes where he was making phone calls to the places, because obviously if he's just making a phone call, they're not going to necessarily know what the person's agenda is. So basically there was a few scenes where he would call up like the American Diabetes Association and be like, hey, I'm just wondering, like, why you put meat recipes on your website when many studies show that meat consumption is correlated with diabetes. And the people are just like, I'm sorry, like, I can't answer that. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, I know he's trying to like squeeze out this like the dramaticness of this, but I was thinking to myself, I was like, if I was that employee, I don't think I would know the answer to that. Like, I think the movie, like the tone of the movie and how it was narrated, were kind of pushing that these people that he were talking to were avoiding answering it. I think that they just didn't know the answer to these questions. Like, if I just called some random, you know, like the frequently asked questions person that I'm talking to isn't going to have the answers to every single very specific question that people ask, especially if it's something that's not even necessarily about diabetes. It's just about like something that they put on the website. So I kind of thought that they were trying to spin that a little bit. I don't know. What do you think, Andy?
No, I had that feeling as well. I was like, if you're just talking to some front desk person or some like kind of low level person that's been trained in the talking points but isn't like the policymaker or something, you know, it did feel like they're trying to get something out of the fact that they couldn't reach anyone higher up on the food chain at these organizations. So I had the same feeling, Paul.
And I mean, like, there was the part where he got the interview. And then, like you said, Andy, like, it's probably because they looked him up. When he actually gets to the place, they canceled the interview. So it's he's kind of just like, gosh darn it, I'm trying to make a movie here, and they're just like ruining all my the shots that I need.
Yes. Yeah, so I would love to chat with them a little bit. Maybe we'll get them on the show again. We did have Keegan, who is the guy behind the camera. He was interviewed in the early days of the Beard Vegans podcast. So I guess we could say friend of the show, Keegan Kuhn. But anyway, bringing it back to the beginning of the film, Paul, one of the very first things they bring up is the headlines, which we actually covered way back in episode 8, which we asked, should meat eaters be treated like smokers? When they talk about the studies that came out that were spun by the media and the vegan community is saying that cigarettes were as bad as bacon in terms of causing cancer. Mm-hmm. And I watched that, and it made me think about that discussion that we had. And, you know, this is actually in the days before we had show notes, so I couldn't look at the articles that we had discussed. But I did, you know, I kind of went and did a little more research again, because I remember we were talking about how we felt like that assessment of the situation was a bit, if not dishonest, but kind of misreading the data. And we talked about the math behind it, you know, because they say that consuming processed meats raises your risk of cancer 18%, but there's a difference between raising it by 18% versus raising it to 18%. So according to the National Cancer Institute, one's lifetime risk of colorectal cancer is 4.5%. And when it's raised by 18%, it just raises it to 5.3%.
Yeah.
Which is not, obviously, that's not great. That's not good. No one wants to increase the risk of cancer by any percent. But I feel like when, you know, people who are not versed in statistics and how these things kind of lay out, which is the vast majority of us, and certainly, you know, before I really looked into these numbers, I didn't know exactly how the phrasing affected things. But I feel like a lot of people could see that and go, your risk of getting colorectal cancer is 18%. Like, your lifetime risk is 18% if you eat bacon. And that's not necessarily the case. So I didn't love that they used that as the opening talking point, even though it is very much like this is a big thing. Cigarettes and bacon are the same thing, essentially. So I don't know. I didn't love that. But I think if people want to hear a big full discussion on that, go back and listen to episode 8.
Yeah.
Did that catch your eye at all, Paul?
Yeah, because when that came up, I was like, we talked about this, and I like you said, I couldn't remember exactly what it was, but I was like, I remember the conclusion we came to was that it was misleading the data. So yeah, basically, it makes it they frame it as if your risk of getting cancer is almost increased by a fifth versus increased by less than 1%.
Yeah.
So whatever. I mean, it's a very alarming thing to say until you really look into it. So it's like, it's totally understandable why they used it, but yeah, it is definitely misleading.
Yeah. And I guess someone that had sort of, that did do research when those things were making headlines might see that and then watch the rest of the film and think, well, how else are they kind of manipulating certain numbers? Because there's a lot of stuff, as we said, in here that I was not familiar with. So I was just like, well, I just assume this is true without really looking into it. You know, and I think it's important for us to watch these films from the point of view of someone who is skeptical. Like, what holes are they going to poke in this film? You know, because, like, obviously the average vegan's going to watch this and be like, oh, yay, this is a very important film because it promotes veganism, and they're willing to gloss over certain things, or, you know, they've heard certain talking points repeated by the vegan community so many times that they accept it as truth without really looking into how certain things might be misleading.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, as far as this whole beginning section goes, I think I absolutely loved the fact that this was a film that basically within the first 25, 30 minutes, even with Kip's little introduction thing, in that time, thoroughly convinced me that eating any animal product is horrible for human health. It didn't take a full hour and a half, even though the film is an hour and a half, but it goes into all these other aspects of health and government policy and things like that. And it was actually kind of refreshing because, you know, I couldn't help but compare this to Eating You Alive, the last health documentary that we did, Paul, where it was something that I liked, but also it was like it was a bit much, where they're just throwing all this information at you, and it's a million talking heads of various doctors throwing all this, and it's like they spent an hour and a half like really, 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 really thoroughly explaining why things were unhealthy. And this film just kind of showed that you don't need to spend that much time on it to really convey the point and to get the point across. Obviously, different people are going to want different information or things framed differently. So obviously, you know, Eating You Alive is going to appeal more to some people. But I liked that it wasn't just an hour and a half of switching back and forth between, you know, the usual faces, Dr. Barnard, Dr. Greger. No T. Colin Campbell, though. But, you know, Esselstyn, McDougal, Michael Clapper. It's like all the people we're used to seeing. It's like, yeah, we don't need another hour and a half of these faces that we see in every documentary explaining this all over again. So they as concisely as I think they could have, really laid it out and thoroughly went through everything. And I love that they like were like, no, chicken is especially bad for you. Fish is especially bad for you. Dairy, eggs are especially bad for you. And I feel like kind of in the vein of Cowspiracy, it felt like they made the documentary, showed it to people, and then said, what are the objections? Like, what did we not cover? Oh, we didn't talk about, you know, canine teeth. We didn't talk about, you know, just various things. Like, okay, now we're going to put a section in on that, you know, mm-hmm. which is something I loved about Cowspiracy, because it was like, well, what about local? What about grass-fed? And, you know, all of these things that people bring up in response to very general documentaries about these topics, they included those things. And they did most of that in the first 30 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. I was actually very surprised that they brought up the canine teeth thing, just because I feel like people are going to watch that, and people that use that as an argument are still going to stick with their argument. I don't know. I don't think it was bad that they brought it up, but I could see that as one thing that someone with an opposing view would stick to that opposing view versus just trying to get people to be like, who cares? Yeah. Like, who cares if what our teeth are shaped like, because we are perfectly capable of eating a vegan diet. So it's like, that's what really matters, is that we're like, it's possible to do that. So, yeah, like I said, I don't think it was the worst thing in the world that they brought it up, but that wasn't something that I could see people being like, oh, I strongly believed that like our canine teeth meant we are omnivores. So I'm like, but then I watched this and now my mind has changed. I don't know. I could be wrong. I mean, it's probably going to work for some people. So I guess including it wasn't a bad thing.
No, I mean, Paul, I honestly feel the same way about it. I understand why they put it in. I didn't mind the teeth thing. I feel like, though, when you try and prove that humans are naturally suited to be frugivores, and when you get into that territory, I feel like it's really dicey and really unnecessary. And, yeah, I wish they just had a clip of, like, Dr. Greger dismissively being like, you know, it doesn't matter what we're naturally suited to do. You know, naturally, obviously, we can thrive on a plant-based diet because we have all of this information out there. You know, just kind of putting that into perspective because, yeah, when you start to make the argument that we are naturally this or that, then all of a sudden your argument hinges on being able to prove that fact. And if someone else is like, well, no, we're actually omnivores, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's totally irrelevant. So personally, I don't think it was the best inclusion, but I understand why they included it. And I think that for some people, that will be an important piece of the puzzle. But, you know, it's like, it's almost like we don't even need to bring that up because everything else in the film says that we're totally capable of thriving on a plant-based diet. So you don't need to bring up this argument about teeth. But, I mean, it is something that people bring up all the time. You know, when I was doing outreach, people were just like, yeah, look at my teeth. Look at my teeth. I got these teeth. Got to eat meat. Got to factory farm chickens because I have these teeth. You know? So it's like, I get why they put it in there. But I think that in general, it's not an argument that as vegans we need to engage in.
Yeah, I think it's more effective to show people like Rich Roll and then talk about how he competed in 5 Ironman competitions or races in 1 week, which I think is like obscene that's like an absurd amount of mileage that he covered in 1 week. And I think like that's a more effective way of being like, hey, look, I can thrive on this diet. I can do these things that are like these Superman level feats on this diet. Like, I think that's more effective than trying to argue like the teeth thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that.
Also, that's like 700 miles of travel in 1 week combined with biking, running, and swimming.
Yeah, it is quite a feat, and I think it is very impressive.
He's like one of the go-to vegan athletes, and I'm glad that they had a couple other athletes that I hadn't seen before, because usually it's the same ones. But I was glad to see that they had a couple other athletes that I didn't know about.
Yeah, I like that they had a variety of sports. I like that they had, I'm forgetting people's names, but they had the surfer, they had the kind of parkour guy.
Mm-hmm.
They had David Carter. So I like that they had a few names that we're not used to seeing in a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Something else that I really loved about the film was how much after about that 30-minute mark, and they kind of shift gears and they talk about the role that the meat, dairy, and egg industry has had in shaping diet advice. And this is where the kind of the dramatic stuff really comes in. Because, you know, they convince people that eating animals is horrible, but then they talk about, you know, why we're still eating these animals. Why hasn't there been a massive movement, you know, on the part of the government or USDA or whatever to change these dietary habits, knowing how horrible this stuff is for us? And that's where it gets into the very conspiracy-esque, the cowspiracy-esque aspects mm-hmm. of the whole thing. So I love that because... You know, it's something that, like, you can get someone to believe that eating these things is horrible for you, but then to get people outraged about the fact that they have been lied to and manipulated and, you know, big government, big money, lobbying, all of those things are playing such a huge part of what they eat and the things they've been told to eat. You know, that's something that kind of strikes a different nerve, I think. And you know, gets people like angry and like pissed off at this source. And it, you know, could almost be a thing where it's like, well, I'm going to spite these industries and withdraw my money and I'm going to eat a plant-based diet instead, because I'm not going to let, you know, big lobbying powers tell me what to eat.
Yeah, I think that it is genius that they do that, whether this was intentional or not. But I think it's genius because it's almost like it's taking the blame off of you for doing something wrong and putting the blame on like these big companies who are, it's easy to get angry at this massive entity. And it's like, oh man, I've been lied to this whole time. Like I'm going to make this change because I've been lied to. It's not like, oh, I'm going to make this change because I'm doing something wrong. I'm going to make this change because someone else was doing something wrong that affected me. And I think that it's absolutely a brilliant way to get people to make changes, because it's, obviously I would also want people, especially for the, you know, like the animal ethicality of it, I want people to change their thinking surrounding that. But I think it's a good start. And it's so much easier to digest having people be angry at someone else than having the anger towards them, or being feeling like guilty, or feeling, you know, like they're being attacked. So I think it's a lot easier to digest this kind of change than it would be to say like, hey, you're doing something wrong and you need to make a change about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't really thought about that in the ways that you had expressed it just now, Paul, but I think that you're right. That is a very smart move. And, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I think Kip is a really good kind of like everyman blank canvas almost. Like, you know, you're kind of putting yourself in his shoes and you're like, yeah, I've looked up like how to be healthy before. And I've dealt with always feeling like I'm sick. And you're just kind of able to put yourself in his shoes. And then, you know, Kip isn't on screen being like, how dare everyone support these industries? He's just like, oh, I can't believe I was taken advantage of. And by proxy, you're like, I've been taken advantage of. So I think, yeah, very, very powerful, and not something that really any, most of the other health documentaries, even Eating You Alive, which did talk a little bit about these things, I don't think it did that like nearly as well, or really even if at all. So kudos to What the Health for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved how kind of on that note, they were discussing, they had a big section on all of the antibiotics and medicines that get pumped into animals. And they talk about how it's essentially like a proprietary secret what antibiotics are being given to animals. And therefore, it's like impossible to find out how they might be affecting your health and how they might be infecting the environment. Like, that was another point when I was just like, ugh, I'm so angry right now. And I want to do something about it. So hopefully that's something that strikes a chord with other viewers.
Yeah, it was, I thought a very good scene, that was a terribly phrased, a very important scene that they had was when they were, they went to that town where all of like there was a lot of animal agriculture going around, and it basically showed how it was affecting the actual community. And I think in a lot of these health documentaries, it's just talking about like, oh, I am consuming animal products and that's how it's affecting my health. But this was talking about something else still related to health. It's how the animal agriculture industry itself is affecting the health of the communities where it's located. And I don't, has like any other movie that we've seen kind of gone into that?
I mean, Cowspiracy a little bit. Well, not even a little bit in Cowspiracy. They went into that pretty thoroughly because they interviewed people near a hog farm, I believe.
But I don't know. I just thought that was like a, it was an important element that is still absolutely related to health that is overlooked in a lot of these documentaries.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I feel like it's a shame that this isn't included in other documentaries. Yeah, I think people think of it as an environmental thing, but obviously, you know, the environment really, in my estimation, only matters because sentient beings are affected by it. You know, obviously animals, but also, you know, non-human animals, but the human animals in them as well. I thought this whole section in Duplin County with the hog farms was incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. I was like, this, even if this was just a clip on YouTube, I think everyone should see this clip. You know, and they talk about how, you know, if you eat bacon, you are harming human beings, and you know, just kind of putting it so succinctly was very powerful. I loved the gentleman who I'm struggling on his name right now, but you know, he said, if you bring up to these hog farmers and or like the corporations really that what they're doing is really negatively impacting the communities, they say, well, we're trying to feed the world. And so he says, you know, they're not interested in feeding the world. They're interested in making money. If you take away the money, they'll just let folks starve. And I was just like, ugh, the like righteous anger in that statement. And like, and seeing this kind of very kind of just like rural American, like this isn't some like hipster vegan person or some doctor in a suit. This is just like a down home country kind of guy.
Yeah.
And like, I just think that will strike such a chord with so many people when they see it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was, I think one of them like that. And that was, I think the most like emotionally powerful scene. And then the scene with the American Diabetes Association guy was definitely the most like intense moment of the movie. And like those two scenes were, I thought, very, very well done and beneficial.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there, Paul. I think those are probably the two most impactful scenes.
And I wish that they had gone, I'm glad that they mentioned it. I wish they had gone more into the kind of was the Dr. Milton Mills,
yes,
his just kind of like offhand comment about how milk is a form of institutionalized racism. And it's like, I'm so glad that they mentioned it. I wish they had gone more into it, but it's like, even mentioning it is, I think, more than a lot of these other movies have done.
Yeah, I can't think of a single documentary that we've watched that has included that information. Yeah, I love that Dr. Mills was in there, even though they're kind of explicitly standing on a rooftop. But like, there's a couple of really good personalities in this film. Obviously, we're both big fans of Gregor, and he has a couple great moments in there. Maybe we'll include those on our little odds and ends at the end of the episode, like we normally do. But when Milton Mills was talking about this, and just sort of saying, the government is telling black folks, and he lists, you know, the rates of lactose intolerance in various demographics around the world, and he's telling black folks to eat, the government's telling black folks to eat something that is literally making them ill, and it's something that they profit off of, you know, like putting it like that, I feel like really got the point across. I'm with you, Paul, that I just wish there was maybe a sentence or two more. Or, you know, if then they cut to like Lauren Ornelas from Food Empowerment Project kind of giving her little spiel that she often gives and talks about environmental racism and institutionalized racism and how all these things are connected. And you know, we know they're friends with her because she's in Cowspiracy. if they had just done that just a little bit more, I think that would have been awesome. I guess I understand why they felt like. This is total speculation. I assume that, you know, they kind of felt like they were trying to figure out how much of this can we put into this documentary before we start to lose a lot of people. But also, if someone's not versed in these issues and they hear that, they might go, huh? Like, what the hell are they talking about? Like, institutionalized racism and milk and... you know, it could lead them to dismiss the documentary because of that. So I don't know. I think they probably had a pretty tricky job in finding that balance.
Yeah. But like I said, I'm glad that it was included in any extent.
Yeah, no, I that was the moment, the first time I watched it that I kind of like clapped a little bit. Cause I was just like, yes, they're going there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think how do you pronounce it? Duplin County?
I think so.
Like that touched upon that a little bit too, right? I think it they had mentioned that the animal agricultural like factories and stuff are more likely to be near communities of color, right?
Yes. Yes, they did.
So it's like, they were like touching upon it a little bit, and I'm glad that they did talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like that this film, you know, was able to explore a little bit more kind of a holistic picture of what health means. Like you said, Paul, it doesn't just mean what goes into your body. It means what goes into your body. How does that affect other people's health around the world as well as the animals? How much of this film do you feel like kind of inserted an animal rights agenda? Or do you think that was like pretty absent from the whole thing?
I think there was just like a small little tidbit, right? That was like, yeah, and we're like harming, like, you know, like we're killing sentient beings. I think there was like just one. I think it was kind of like the health section of Cowspiracy. I think there was just one, like just like a few lines about it.
Yeah, yeah, I felt like it was very much not really said, or it wasn't really said directly by a lot of people. But they did also cut to footage of animal agriculture operations very often, and, you know, it was not, like, the gruesome slaughter footage for the most part, but it was, you know, pigs crammed in cages and chickens crammed in cages, and, you know, it was kind of subtly getting across the point that the animals do not live in good conditions.
A lot of pus footage.
Definitely some pus.
Too much pus, some might say.
Yeah, as someone who enjoys watching videos of like cysts getting popped on YouTube, the pus was a bit much.
The Bearded Vegans, : the pus was a bit much.
anyway, but also that's something that again would really kind of make meat seem incredibly unappealing.
True. Yes.
So I get that. I like that they included that in the film, even though again, a little bit much in that bus.
Talking about something that I think both of us like this, because we had kind of teased at the beginning of this episode, like, oh yeah, there was some information that we had never known about before. The big thing for me was that they downplayed so much the effect of any other thing besides animal products on your health. Like, I felt like they kind of made it seem like consuming animal products was the only thing that could be potentially harmful to your health, and that like any other anything else that you've ever heard that could be bad for you, sugar, carbs, non-animal fat, is like perfectly fine. And I was kind of like, this was the one thing that I had mentioned at the beginning of the episode. This was the one thing that I was like, I don't know if that's like, I don't mean to disagree with people that are clearly more knowledgeable about this stuff than me, but it's like, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah. The sugar thing made me, my ears perk up a little bit, especially cause you know, I've watched Fed Up, which is like a whole film about how horrible sugar is for you. And with a set of equally seemingly reputable scientists and doctors talking about these things. And so it was like, huh, okay. But I mean, I like that they explained, it's like, well, we need a cookie. You know, it's not really the sugar or the flour, but it's the butter and the eggs that are really doing the thing for you. But I mean, it was something that, yeah, I thought it was weird how much they downplayed that aspect of it.
Yeah, because, and right, they said, like, sugar didn't, because they talked a lot about diabetes.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sure that I can find studies that are correlating sugar intake and diabetes. Like, I would imagine that I would be able to find them if I just Googled, like, correlation between sugar and diabetes. And I'm sure that I'd be able to find videos of people explaining it that seem just as legitimate as the clips of people from What the Health explaining how it didn't have any effect on diabetes.
Yeah, I guess that remains to be something we need to do a little more research on. But again, I'm like, I don't expect that they would include that if they didn't feel like they could back it up in any way.
I guess. And you know, it's like they explain, like there's a lot of cool graphics and images that like explain what's going on in your body. But you know, it's like as someone who doesn't know anything about this stuff, it's like it all just kind of seems right, you know? The way that when these things are explained, it seems like it's right, and I don't have the knowledge to refute any of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's why they're here, to refute what is typically considered common knowledge. Because, I mean, Paul, they also brought up, you know, the whole protein thing and how we don't really need that much protein. And if I wasn't a vegan that was well-versed in that and knew that we, you know, there's kind of this obsession with protein and we don't need nearly as much as we're getting unless it's someone making some severe gains like you, Paul.
But
like I would watch it and I'd go, there's no way that's right. You know, so it could be the same thing with the sugar.
But I'll also say about that note, because I think it was too, well, it was on our last film review where I had voiced a concern about how in the movie, what was the last movie that we watched?
Eating You Alive.
Eating You Alive, how the phrasing about protein was that a diet that is high in protein is potentially bad and is linked to cancer, or could be linked to cancer. And I had voiced my concern that it didn't, that I've seen other sources and this one didn't specify that they were talking about animal protein and they just mentioned a diet high in protein in general. And I had said, well, I wonder if that's bad for me because I do eat a lot of protein. And in this movie, they specifically said like, oh, diets high in animal protein. Like they were really nailing home that I thought that like animal products and only animal products are the things that are bad for you and everything else is kosher. Like I felt like that's, and it was to an extent that it was almost like, I thought it was very like scare tactic-y. Like it was like, this stuff is going to kill you tomorrow. Like if you keep eating this, it was very like, I don't know. I thought it was very like scary how they were describing the effects of animal products on your health.
Well, Paul, it's a scary thing.
It is a scary thing, but I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know why I was just a little bit skeptical about, because it's like if I just ate a tub of Earth Balance, like that's not good for me, you know?
Yeah, but who's going to eat a tub of Earth Balance?
But like, what if I baked a bunch of cookies that had Earth Balance in them?
Well, don't eat all those cookies, Paul.
But I, no, you know what I mean, though? It's just like, it's that's still, that's not an animal product, but it's still not. Although I guess this isn't contradicting what they were saying, because they were, I think a lot of what they were saying was it's the fats that are bad for you and not the carbs or the sugar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even that, it's like, I don't know. I just don't think I could just funnel a bunch of sugar in my mouth and come out good on the other side.
Well, yeah, it's like they had that study where they're eating what, apples, rice, and sugar.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they acknowledged that that's not a healthy diet, but it did cure diabetes, I think they were saying.
Yeah.
You know, because they're getting the animal stuff out of there. But obviously you're not getting, you know, nuts and seeds and dark leafy greens and berries and things that are healthy for you in there.
Yeah.
But it will attack the cause of the diabetes.
And kind of related, I guess. Related in the sense that there were a couple things I was skeptical about. That was one of them. The other one was, while I don't think the movie... Well, I don't think What the Health went as far as a lot of other... One of these movies, in that it said, like, oh, this is the diet that will, like, cure you of any and all ailments and sicknesses. And, oh, you got a bad knee? Boom. Bad knee's gone. Oh, you got tendonitis? Boom. Tendonitis gone. I don't think it went as far in saying that the plant-based diet is, like, the miracle diet, although it did have aspects of it. At the very end of the movie, or very close to the end of the movie, there was a couple people that it had cut to a few times that were like, oh, I have a lot of health problems, and now I switched on a plant-based diet. There was a couple of people that it switched to, and the two people that it switched to had said that in 2 weeks, they had both gotten off, like, all of their medications, and it had previously gone over what medications they were taking, and it was, like, a couple dozen different medications. And I was like, I don't know if they should be promoting that you'll be able to stop, like, over 20 medications in a time of 2 weeks. That just seemed like a little, that seemed suspicious to me. I was like, 2 weeks is not that long of a time. Like, I don't even know if 2 weeks is enough time to, like, completely get all of the whatever toxins and everything out of your system.
I mean, I feel like we see stories like this all the time, so I don't doubt that. I think one person got off all of them, the other person got off half of them, and they said they're working towards getting off all of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the thing that we see all the time. But I do agree with you, Paul, that someone could watch this and perceive it as a magical cure-all for everything. You know, especially when they have the athletes that are like, I used to bench 225 five times, and now I bench, like, 450 65 times in a row. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, that's a pretty big drastic difference. So, you know, I do worry about over-promising on those things. And I wish, you know, it's like, obviously, if you have athletes where it's, like, their job to be in the peak, you know, of physical health, they're going to be able to do some pretty great things on a plant-based diet. But I wish that they also had, because they had, like, the very sick people, and they all happen to be overweight, and we'll talk about that in a second. And then they have, like, these super athletes that are doing five Ironmans in a row, but they didn't just have, like, the average person in there. I mean, I guess they kind of did if people assume that the doctors are vegan and if Kip is now vegan. But, you know, it almost – I wish that they kind of had someone say, like, you know, we're not saying that doing this will enable you to bench 450 pounds 65 times in a row. But it doesn't hurt, you know, or, you know, it's something like that. That's like, we're not saying that if you do this, you're going to be able to run 500 miles in a row. But, you know, you're capable of doing that on a plant-based diet. You know, so they set more realistic expectations.
Yeah.
I think that's like a little more of a responsible thing to do.
Yeah, but that doesn't make for a good movie.
It does not. You know what apparently does make for a good movie, Paul?
What's that?
Footage of fat people cut off right where their head is, just the torsos, just wandering around.
Oh.
So, I you know, it's almost funny that haven't talked about this until right now, although I mentioned a little bit in the beginning. But overall, and this is something, I think we had an episode where we just played the preview for the film and we talked about the trailer and we talked about our impressions of it. And they showed that clip of, like, you see on the news, fat people walking around.
Yeah,
and I was worried because I was like, how are they going to do a health thing without talking about this? And in many ways, I was actually really impressed that the vast majority of the film was not about weight loss, that it was about things that can certainly be associated with higher weight, but not necessarily, you know, heart disease, diabetes, cancers or whatever it might be. Like, they talk about those, but they're never like, hey, if you're fat, you're going to get cancer. If you're fat, you're going to get this, that, whatever. But it is there. It felt like they kind of got it out of the way pretty early on and then didn't really talk about weight too much. But there was one line that they included in the film, Paul, that I was like, ugh.
Not, I think I know which line you're talking about.
Good. I wrote it down. It's Dr. Garth Davis, who, go figure, happens to be a weight loss surgeon. So he makes money off of fat people. He said, no one wants to fat shame, and we all want to be comfortable with our bodies, but this movement to be comfortable with our bodies has made us comfortable with being sick.
And this movement to be comfortable with our bodies is also taking money away from the thing that I do to make money.
Yes. How am I going to sell books to people about how to lose weight, and how am I going to perform surgery on them if they're all, you know, yeah. So this, he said this line, and the first time I saw the film, like a month ago or so, I was like, this really bugs me, and I'm not sure exactly why this really bugs me. You know, this is like an issue that is like near and dear to me, but also not something that I'm like super involved in. It's not the thing that I'm well versed in all the talking points on this stuff. Mm-hmm. But his words are something that I've seen on, you know, forums online, on Facebook, time and time again, where people are like, well, you know, body acceptance is great and all, but you're just accepting that you're unhealthy and that you're sick and all that stuff. And, you know, it's like you don't hear this about other body types. Like, it's only associated with like fat people. And so it's like, I don't think that people that bring this kind of stuff up are like just doing it because they like hate fat people or something. But it's like, it only comes up around fat people. It doesn't really, for the most part, come up around like very skinny people. It doesn't come up around people that like look healthy on the outside, but on the inside might not be too healthy. We talked about Bob Harper last episode. Yeah. And that whole thing. And, you know, I feel like including this line in the film, in a film that's going to get people all jazzed up about eating plant-based, is almost like amping people up to like go out into the world and give fat people a hard time about what they eat under the guise of caring about them. You know, people are like, I'm only saying this because I care about you. And it's always just super disingenuous.
Yeah. So is that what bothered you about it? You had said that you couldn't figure out what irked you about it.
I think so. I mean, you know, it's because like shaming people for their bodies is not the thing that motivates people to lose weight. You know, like studies show that when you get people more comfortable with their bodies, they're more able and likely and capable of making healthy choices for themselves. And, you know, healthy is, I guess, subjective, but you know, it just seems like this is kind of fuel to the fire of making people hate their bodies, or getting, you know, sending people out there to you know, say these things to fat people. It's like, hey, I know you, it's good you're comfortable with yourself, but you're really just comfortable with being sick and unhealthy.
Yeah. Hey, it's good that you're happy, but I'm gonna make you unhappy now.
You know, it's not like the whole film was like a fat shaming film. Like, again, they got it out of the way pretty early, and I like, part of me is like, are we ever gonna see a documentary about health that doesn't talk about weight in the way that's talked about here? But I don't know. It just seems unfortunate that they could have easily kind of cut this out of the film, and I don't think we would have lost any impact whatsoever.
Yeah, and it's like, I do wish that they had focused on different body types as well, because I think they had mentioned the whole, like, hey, like, just, like, right. Did they mention just the idea that it's like, oh, you could look like fit or whatever on the outside, but you don't know what's going on the inside. You could be at risk of like heart disease and stuff like that. I think they did mention that, but it's not.
They do when they were talking about paleo, because they were like, you know, that's why you get people that look really healthy that are dropping dead of heart attacks at age 39.
Yeah. And it's like, they could pay more attention. They could like focus more on that, because, you know, it's like every other health documentary is already doing every, like, the one specific body type anyways. So it, you know, like you said, it would be nice to represent different body types.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I guess it was just disappointing, but part of me was almost like, I guess that's almost the best I could hope for, you know, coming like with this type of thing. But it sucks that I have such a low bar in these types of documentaries.
Yeah. Anything else, Andy?
Actually, yeah. You know, something that I didn't necessarily love about the film was the part where they kind of debunk the it's expensive to eat vegan part. I guess it had me thinking about the limits of this type of film and messaging, because I think different messages are needed for different demographics. It felt like they were so set on just getting out this message that it's cheap and easy and anyone can do it, that they gloss over the fact that that might not be the case for everybody. And, you know, I loved that they had friend of the show, Tony Okamoto from Plant Based on a Budget, in there showing how cheap it can be at a supermarket. But also, that's not a supermarket or a grocery store that everybody has access to. And, you know, you always hear cheap eating is shop in the bulk bin, shop in the bulk bins. Like, the vast majority of supermarkets I've ever been to do not have bulk bins. So, you know, that part of the film didn't sit quite right. But again, I'm like, for some people, that's what they need. They need someone to be like, you know, for the people that can easily afford it and do have access, like, that's the message they need to see. So it's like, I mean, I guess just having some kind of like acknowledgement of the fact that it's not easy for everybody. But for, you know, if you have access to a supermarket, then if you have access to this, whatever it might be, then it is going to be easier for you. You know, I guess just some kind of acknowledgement of that, especially since they did acknowledge like the environmental racism and some of the other things that a lot of these documentaries don't talk about. It felt like it was just like a little bit short-sighted in that department for my taste.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to say that a moment that I wanted to highlight was something you mentioned, which was when there was an interview with a surgeon and then it got canceled, and then they were met by a rep from the hospital who said, I know he advocates for changing people's diets, but the reality is the hospital makes money off of these surgeries, and he does too, so we can't do anything that would negatively impact the hospital. And I was just like, I can't believe they got her saying that on camera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, that was another one of those, like, people are going to get angry at this whole establishment. And, like, I really did like that they were kind of like, look how much money the pharmaceutical industry spends lobbying. It's like way more than all these other industries. And you know, the profit is not in curing people. It's in, you know, maintaining people's sicknesses. So I like that. You know, again, I don't want people to come out of the film going like, you don't need any medication at all. You just have to go eat some plants. You know, that's something we talked about in Eating You Alive as well. Like, I worry what kind of thing that primes people up to go out into the world and how they talk about things. And, you know, that meme that's like, you know, this is an antidepressant, and they show like a hiking trail, and they're like, this is shit, and they show medication. And you're like, you know, there's kind of a mid ground between those things. Like, it's not necessarily one or the other. So I do worry about that a little bit, but overall, I think that it's like good information. Something that was new to me was they were talking about the cheeseburger laws, which essentially is saying that, you know, if someone gets some health related issue because of food they're eating from like a fast food restaurant, they can't sue that restaurant. And how that was directly inspired by the fact that the tobacco industry got into so much hot water and had to pay out all this money. And I didn't know about that. I probably should have known about that. But I was just like, oh, God, it's just so horrible and so evil.
Yeah, I liked that they brought up, because I think we talked about this in a very early episode, right? The fact that they can't call eggs like healthy or a health food or good for you. It's like legally eggs can't be labeled as like nutritious
or even safe.
Yes. Like, we talked about that early in a very early episode.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. But I was like, oh, I remember that. But that's like, so, I mean, it's like comically distressing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that they included that. Again, I love that they didn't just focus on processed meat and red meat, which is usually the scapegoat in a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I love that they talked about eggs. I love that, you know, Michael Clapper, I think, put it in perspective. He's like, this is a concentrated glom of, like, fat and cholesterol, and it's designed to sustain, you know, a baby chick for 21 days with nothing else, no other outside input. And, you know, kind of like the baby cow growth fluid, which he does say in this one, baby cow growth fluid line from Cowspiracy. It's like, wow, when you put it like that, it really makes you understand what's in an egg and what it's there for and how it's maybe not the best thing for a human to consume.
Yeah. Yeah. I only wish, because I went back and I found that little video clip that we had talked about originally about eggs not being able to be labeled as nutritious. And it's actually a little video by Dr. Greger narrated by him. And I wish they had just inserted that whole, just I would listen to him talk forever.
Yeah. He is the best. He comes in at, I wrote it down, 6 minutes and 30 seconds. And, you know, it's 6 minutes and 30 seconds too late. I wish he was just the entire film. He has, like, my favorite kind of comical moment in the whole film was when they bring up eating for your blood type. And he just kind of, mm-hmm. like, rolls his eyes and sighs and is like, I mean, what do you want me to say? That's like someone saying I need to eat meat because I'm a Capricorn. It's just like,
yeah, that was a good line.
I was dying at that moment. I thought Greger is always great, and he's kind of the most consistent presence throughout the whole film as well. So,
good choice.
For that alone, I think people should see this film. With that said, I don't really have, you know, normally you have a bunch of like unintentionally funny moments to kind of pick apart, and I felt like the film overall, very competently made, you know, technically very well put together. Like you said, Paul, it looks beautiful, and I can't wait to see what they do next. I think that they're a really great filmmaking team, despite the fact that, you know, when we do these reviews, negative things kind of take up more time than the positive things. But like overall, I think this is a really important film. I think this would be my go-to health documentary if someone's looking for that information. You know, I would include it in my, you know, trilogy or quadrilogy of whatever films to get people on board with veganism, you know, when it'd be like Earthlings and Forks Over Knives and Cowspiracy. It's like, yeah, you know what? What the Health might overtake Forks Over Knives now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you might be right. I will say, one unnecessary, like maybe slightly comical, but more just unnecessary moment was when, I forget who said it, but someone had said like, yeah, when you think about making smoothies and you think about the stuff that goes in smoothies, it's like,
oh, yes, yes.
it like, oh, it sounds really delicious. But the thought of putting meat in a blender is repulsive. And then they literally show someone dropping a fish in a blender and it is so gross.
It looked like it was like a fake fish.
I rewound it a couple times because I was like, is that real?
And your conclusion is that it was real?
I couldn't tell because it like explode, like they put it in head first and it just like explodes and it's so gross.
Yeah, that moment made me laugh as well. I will say something that disappointed me, Paul.
Yeah, not enough Steve-O.
Not enough Steve-O. No Penn Jillette. No, yeah, no B or C list celebrities. Although I guess Steve-O fulfills that quota. I was disappointed that they included Neil Barnard and they didn't get a clip of him talking about other animals' rippling muscles.
I thought you were going to say they didn't get a clip of him just sitting in the garden talking.
Yes, although I love that they continue the tradition of Cowspiracy when they talk about, when they're talking to Ryan Shapiro and Jake Conroy about, you know, incarcerate activists and ag gag laws and stuff. Everyone else is like out in the sun on the rooftop, like chilling in their office, and they're just in these dark rooms with like a dim spotlight on their face.
Yeah, so dramatic. I sent Andy a screen cap of that when it came up because I was like, this is like so spooky, and they're playing this like spooky music. Like half his face is like covered like in shadows. It was like they were like, we really need to set the tone for this scene. And then like when it actually has one scene of like, you know, like a shadowy cell block like closing.
I don't know. And they actually have I forget who the person was. I mean, they don't reveal who they were, but they have like an interview where the person's like pixelated out.
Yeah,
and their voices changed. And
I think it was the guy that exposed mad cow disease.
But anyway, all of that, much like the pus, I was like, that's a bit much. But again, you know, it's for a dramatic effect. It's for making an entertaining film, and visually switches up the visual palette a little bit. So mm-hmm. I can still appreciate it, even though it's like a tad too dramatic for my taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you have any other final thoughts on the film?
I'm looking through my notes. I think we covered everything.
So I think the fact that we didn't have a ton of moments that just really made us laugh kind of goes to show it's a pretty tightly edited, well put together film. And again, I think I could, you know, relatively highly recommend it. I would give someone disclaimers about the fat shaming stuff.
And the fish in the blender.
Yes. Yes. The fish in the blender. It's a little over the top. A little over the tap, Kip and Keegan. But overall, I think it's a film that we could give it a two full beards, probably, Paul.
Two full? Oh, is that out of two?
I guess. What is it? What are we doing? Like half a beard each? That's like two thumbs up.
Yeah, I would give it two out of two beards. Four
this is
thumbs
our first
up.
Time ever using this rating system. Yep. We're working out on air right now.
Well, yeah. I think we've used it before, but I think it was out of five beards.
Yeah. All right.
But now we're scaling it down. Two out of
scaling
two beards.
It down. We only got two beards to give up.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, that'd be funny though if like that was used on like the back of like the DVD case. It's like two beards, and they're like, "Isn't that bad?" Only two. Two beards up.
Two beards. Oh man! All right.
Well, with that said, have you seen the film out there? Let us know what you think. Are we right? Are we wrong? We want to hear from you either way. And you can do that by emailing us at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com or hit us up through thebeardedvegans.com. Go to the Instagram, look for the food. We got the Facebook now. And talk to us. We're lonely and we miss you.
So, Andy, what do you got coming up in the future, in the near future?
This very weekend. I think last episode I said it was this weekend, but I was wrong. It is this weekend. I realize what I just said is quite confusing. But this coming weekend, I will be at Vegan Street Fair in Los Angeles. It has finally come, and I'm very excited. I have a giant 20x20 tent, Paul, that I have to fill up. So Come fill it up with your bodies and give me a high five. And then I will be at the Texas Veg Fest in Austin. That's on April 1st. April 8th and 9th, I'll be at the Nashville Veg Fest in Nashville, Tennessee. April 29th, the Indy Veg Fest in Indianapolis, Indiana. April 30th, the Michigan Veg Fest in Novi, Michigan. So that's gonna round out April. Come on by. I'll be at the Compassion Company table with shirts and all that good stuff. Give me a high five. Let me know what you think of the show. Let's get a picture together. That's always fun. And you can find even more events at CompassionCo.com and links to all the stuff that I'm talking about as well.
All right. I think that about wraps it up for today, Andy.
Well, Paul, so I guess that's kind of the official word. You know, this is such a good health documentary. There's not really a need for us to review one in the future unless something really good comes along.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I just want to happen over and over and over again is you saying the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
For the listener at home, I am currently dying, and sorry if my voice is a little scratchy.
You sound beautiful, Andy.
Thank you, Paul.
Just a little extra ruggedness for this episode.
Yes. Yeah, Paul, I have continued my stay. Wow, my voice just cracked. an intrepid filmmaker on a journey? On this journey of discovery of all these things. Journey. I can't talk. When you get into that, Tori, I feel like that. So come by. I'll be at the Compassion-y. I'll be at the...
All right, so let's get into it. I don't know why I felt I needed to pause. Just going to pause for an hour and a half while you go watch this movie.
I'm just going to put in the Seinfeld theme music right here for an hour and a half.